Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post 9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Sam Madeira here on my show, the Dr. Madeira Show, and today we have a special guest, Dr. Cabran. How's it going today?
Hey, good to see you, Sam. Glad to be here.
Yeah, this is spectacular. Thanks for taking time. I know you're a very busy man and doctor, and you've got a lot going on with your book release and your clinical schedule. So thanks for being on the show today.
Of course.
We actually, looking back, I think we first met in, must have been spring 2005, I think. And when you were in your, I think you were in your final year or your final
Just
stretch.
Just about. Yeah.
At, in medical school at Vassar University. So, we kind of lost track of each other, over the years, but this is awesome to catch up and let people know who you are and what your specialty is. So for those of you who don't know, Dr. Cabran, is, working in mental health field for the past 12 years. He is a graduate of the highly esteemed Vassar University here in Seattle, Washington, and has been a staff physician at the Amen Clinics since 2013, which is spectacular. And I think I came by your clinic a couple of years ago now and saw that you were working there and the amazing facility that you have there. It's in Bellevue, right? Bellevue, Washington.
Yeah.
So if anyone's in Western Washington and you're looking for a great clinic to go to for brain health, and you guys specialize in, you know, preventing dementia, is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the things we focus on. I'd say we see a lot of folks with dementia, helping in early stages, especially brain injuries, of course, ADD, depression, especially treatment-resistant depression, and anxiety and trauma. Those are kind of our, you know, main conditions.
Spectacular. Yeah, and you just wrote your book. What's the title of your book?
Concussion Rescue, a comprehensive program to treat traumatic brain injuries.
Great. Yeah. So when I saw that you had released your book, and actually, I think it was on social media, I was really excited because as we were just chit-chatting before we hit record today, I had a couple of concussions fairly recently. Unfortunately, I get to learn about these things firsthand. So so I'm really excited to chat with you today and have you share your expertise with everybody. And then they can go read your book for more information and work with you if they're ready to do the work that it takes to recover from these kinds of things.
Awesome.
What got you into this kind of work with mental health as well as brain health, specifically head injuries?
Yeah, well, it does go back to our days at Bastyr, I think. So, you know, when we got our board results, that was the same day that my son was born. And it was, it's such a proud day. I felt as a happy father, all of this pressure as well to provide for my son. And so I needed a job. So I was looking in the classifieds and I found a gig at a residential type treatment facility in Edmonds. And, you know, it turned out to be a really good match for me, just working to help people feel their best in their minds and their bodies, using natural methods. So herbs, diet, exercise. And I've always loved that. That's how I got interested in natural medicine in the first place. And so then I got to help people do that. And I thought I was going to do physical medicine or environmental medicine, like detox and cleansing. But really, this is what I was actually meant to do, I think. So I worked in this partial hospital program for 6 years, became medical director there, worked with psychiatrists, counselors, dietitians, and just, it was a rich environment. Patients with substance abuse problems, treatment-resistant depression, trauma, anxiety disorders. It was a great experience. That was like my training ground. And then I started working at Amen Clinics for the past 7 years, which you mentioned, and we're really focus on mental health and brain health and looking at the brain. So we use a type of imaging called SPECT imaging, SPECT. It's a functional scan looking at blood flow, looking at activity as part of an overall assessment. So as naturopathic doctors, you and I, we love to do labs and figure out, you know, get some objective data. So what better to understand the brain than to actually get a picture of the brain and get a scan? And essentially we're looking at three things with a scan. We're looking at what's overactive, what's underactive, and imbalance or asymmetry that can show us, for example, patterns of brain injury versus dementia. You know, if someone comes in with a memory problem, we like to understand, okay, is what, you know, I had a patient, she was a 75-year-old speech pathologist. She had retired. Brilliant lady, but she had had a fall, hit to her head. And over the course of the year, she thought she was going to get better, but her memory started to decline. And so she thought that maybe she was starting to get dementia. And so when we scanned her brain, we could tell that actually it was a brain injury versus Alzheimer's disease. Which is very helpful, because certainly the treatment, you know, although there's some overlap, treatment's different and prognosis is very different. So we were able to get her back on her feet and get her back active in the community again with treatment protocol. So imaging's helpful to understand what's going on with someone.
That's spectacular. Yeah, I've always been really excited to hear about that type of imaging. How does that differ for the listeners from if they were to go to, like, for instance, after I had a concussion a couple years back now, I saw an MD neurologist, and they won't do an MRI for the type of head injury I had. They said, there's no reason to do it. We won't see anything. Yeah. And it's basically watch and wait. But let's say they were to do an MRI for a patient, what would they not see or see on a spec for a head injury? Mm-hmm. Let's say it was a car accident, just to make it something more common for people.
Sure.
MRI to a spec image.
Yeah, great question. Spec versus MRI. And this is where the problem begins with people who are told that they're fine when they leave the ER. You're fine. There's nothing serious going on here. And because they've had maybe a CT scan or an MRI in the hospital, maybe they did. They had loss of consciousness, which is good. We don't want to not do the MRI or the CT of the brain, because there could be a brain bleed, which could be slow and then progressive, and then you could die from this or have serious complication. But that's basically what it's most useful for, is ruling out a brain bleed. And beyond that, it is, especially for mild traumatic brain injury, it's not going to pick it up. So there was this review article in the journal PLOS ONE in 2014 comparing this SPECT to MRI. MRI is looking at the pieces. It's looking at the structure, whereas SPECT is looking at blood flow. So they each have their pros and cons. MRI is going to be better at looking at the specific vasculature, looking for any little tumors and things like that. Really more stronger in that area. But SPECT is stronger with picking up subtle mild changes, toxicity, inflammation, brain injury. So they did this trial comparing, it was a meta-analysis. So they looked at 200 some studies and found SPECT picked up mild traumatic brain injury 94% of the time when it was missed with CT and MRI. So that tells you most of the time it's going to get missed. That we're not surprised by that, but it's as if that's MRI is the only way to look at the brain, and if it's normal, then you're fine. So it's like we're missing this whole piece of information. And there's been many studies to show, it's not just SPECT, to show that there's been brain injury. Like there's a study done where they injected a dye into a patient after brain injury, and you could see that it penetrated through the meninges and into, you know, through the brain, and that there had been injury. So yeah, there's multiple ways to look at this.
Okay, good to know. And how many of these facilities are in the United States where somebody could go and get this kind of imaging if they're not near you?
So we have the world's largest database of SPECT brain scans in the world. 150,000 scans, so we can compare a patient that comes into this database to pick up patterns. Now, we have 8 clinics across the country. There's 4 on the West Coast, 3 on the East Coast, and Chicago, in the major cities, basically. And but also, SPECT imaging is in pretty much every hospital. And it's not being utilized the same way. SPECT imaging is used for heart, you know, for brain, different parts of the body. And so the scanners are a little bit different. And they're usually two-headed versus three-headed cameras. Basically, three-headed cameras are going to give us a clearer, more precise image, and we can get a 3D model of the brain versus a 2D. So it's very easy for people to understand. And, you know, with imaging, basically, I think it's useful for two reasons. We're talking a lot about diagnosis, but also it's therapeutic. And if you can show, for example, someone who has a substance abuse problem, which I worked in this treatment center, denial is real. You know, if your patient who is in treatment for alcohol abuse and is still in denial, sometimes you'll spend a lot of time and resources just trying to talk with someone about this and break through denial. Whereas if you have a picture of their brain in front of them, there's holes. It looks like holes, which are not, it's decreased activity, but it looks, you can see that there's a problem. It just breaks through denial like that. So it's therapeutic. It's motivating. It also helps people and family members. For example, if you've had a brain injury, to realize that it's not that they're lazy. It's not that they're necessarily depressed. They might be, but, that the brain injury is real. The family member can see it. The patient can see it. Yeah.
That's amazing. I've always been fascinated by that kind of imaging and, you know, like a lot of things that we as naturopathic doctors use, it's unfortunate that it's not used more conventionally or commonly in medicine, but also just great and amazing that we have these tools available to people. And, you know,
yes.
So it's right. Really exciting to have that opportunity for people there. Mm-hmm. As far as head injuries, when we look at brain injuries, before we were kind of chatting about how people call a lot of head injuries or minor traumatic brain injuries or MTBIs. And that was the diagnosis that I got. And I can speak to kind of the patient's point of view. There's nothing really minor about it. It sucks.
so true. It can, people cannot work sometimes for weeks. I had a patient who was this airline pilot who had flown to Australia, got punched out at a bar, couldn't fly home, couldn't work, you know, for 2 years. So yeah, I mean, but it was mild traumatic brain injury, you know, for example. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully over time we can, the knowledge that you're working on at the AMN clinics can kind of trickle back into conventional neurology over the years, if ever. but hopefully that trickles in and we can start changing some of these diagnostic nomenclature to, hey, it's a head injury, you know, when the
When you save on auto insurance for driving safe with USAA Safe Pilot, you'll feel like a big deal. Even in a traffic jam. Save up to 30% with USAA Safe Pilot. Restrictions apply.
If you can speak to why it's not minor, you know, why this is actually not beyond just symptoms, but also like what actually happens to the brain when there's a TBI.
Yeah. So I think that's really the key, the heart of this, Sam, is that, we do understand now more than ever what is going on when there has been a brain injury. So there was this researcher at Stanford, Theodore Roth, undergraduate student, amazing. He got to implant an intracranial microscope into a mouse skull. And this is what we do in research. We give these mice brain injuries. You know, unfortunately, this is what happens, but it helps us learn. And we could see real-time footage of a traumatic brain injury happening, and there was this the macrophages were kicked into gear, the microglia, or like macrophages in the brain, like immune cells eating up damaged tissue, eating up inflammation. There was oxidative damage and blood, you know, damage to the meninges, which is like this thin layer covering the brain, and you could see this in real time. And so we know that there's primary injury, which is like physical damage to the brain, blood vessels tearing, neurons tearing, and then there's secondary injury. So there's primary and secondary. Primary is damage. Secondary is this inflammation that happens, this chronic inflammation, this oxidative or rusting of the inside out. It's like a fire that hasn't been put out for months and sometimes years. And that's where we can intervene. So what they did next was they applied glutathione to the mouse skull. This antioxidant, glutathione, we make in the brain, the lungs, the liver, really potent. And they applied it to the mouse skull. And if they applied glutathione immediately, there was 67% less cell death. If applied within 3 hours, there was 50% less cell death. So there's this window of time in which to act. And that's what I'm talking about with concussion rescue, is that we have an entirely different way of approaching concussions and traumatic brain injury, that there is a window in time of which to act. It's sort of like RICE, rest, ice, compression, elevation for a sprained ankle. Our brain is so much more valuable. Why do we stand on the sidelines and just watch and wait and hope people get better? Just go home and rest. The standard protocol, do your CT, your MRI, rule out a brain bleed, yes. Do physical therapy, yes. Speech therapy, whatever needs to be done. But let's also facilitate actual healing and quench that inflammation. Restore and put the brain in a healing environment, essentially. And that's what concussion rescue is all about, is putting the brain back into a healing environment so that a brain can be healed, not just from a concussion, but also from a brain injury that has been going on for months and sometimes years, and that actually can be healed many years later.
Spectacular. Yeah, that was a really great explanation of the mechanism. And maybe you can help me and the listeners understand why somebody would use glutathione and why they wouldn't want to use something like ibuprofen or another non-steroidal anti-inflammatory
excellent
drug.
Excellent question.
For that inflammation in the brain. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I got to tell you about another study. So in the book, it's all referenced, tons of research. I feel like we have to have research on these things because it is a different approach. So they did a crash trial in 2005. It was called the crash trial. And essentially the standard of care prior to 2005 was if someone had a severe brain injury, TBI, maybe loss of consciousness, and they're in a coma or something, they were given corticosteroids to just slam down inflammation, because it's inflammation, right? That's the problem, swelling and inflammation. Let's just slam it down. So they found that more people who were given corticosteroids died. So they decided, nope, this isn't a good idea. And that was became the end of the standard of care of giving corticosteroids in, IV in the emergency room for TBIs. So ibuprofen, same thing, that it's when we have a mechanism of action that is singular and specific, it has potential problems because the brain is so multifactorial. There's multiple mechanisms of action. We need to match that with treatments that are multifactorial, multiple mechanisms of action. And where better to find those treatments than within the world of nature? Hormones, herbs, you know, curcumin, for example, is anti-inflammatory, plus it also opens up aquaporins, which decreases swelling. So, and it's more mild and gentle. So that's where I think we have to look. And there's actually hundreds of studies now demonstrating that this that these are effective, especially if you combine multiple things. So progesterone with vitamin D works better than just vitamin D or just progesterone, but both are helpful at reducing death. I mean, most of the studies are on acute TBI in ERs for preventing death or significant morbidity or long-term problems. And so, but all of the trials, when they get to larger scale, tend to fail. And I think the reason is there's not a combination approach. It's just, again, the drug model. Let's just use vitamin D, or let's just use vitamin E, or just progesterone. And then when they get to large scale, it fails. But if we had a trial that combined multiple things, so we do like vitamin C, vitamin E, progesterone, vitamin D, ketogenic diet, that would work. I really believe that. I think that trial would be hugely successful in a large scale, even a small scale. So at Amen Clinics, we studied football players, retired NFL, and we took 30 of them and had them, you know, we scanned them first, had them do cognitive testing, and then their brains looked terrible, you know, very low activity, damage to frontal lobe, temporal lobe, parietal lobe. Often they had anger problems, mood problems, memory problems, and put them on a supplement protocol, which we can talk about, multiple vitamin, fish oil, nutrients that increase blood flow and stabilize cell membranes, phosphatidylserine, ginkgo, vinpocetine, alpha-lipoic acid, N-acetylcysteine, NAC, which is a precursor to glutathione, and then had them lose weight if they needed to, treated sleep apnea, and after 6 months, 80% improvement in symptoms, cognitive testing, brains look better, memory better, mood better, anger better. And so this works in football players who it's been 10, 20 years since they've had their injuries. They're probably headed towards CTE. Now they're headed away from CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is what we're finding out some of these athletes are going to get, which is like a dementia syndrome that can happen. But doesn't have to be the case, and it doesn't have to be a football player. I mean, many people who have had car accidents, hits to the head, falls. I mean, most people who have head injuries are not football players. They're people like you and me who have fallen. I've fallen off my skateboard a ton of times, hit my head as a kid, fallen out of trees. And then, yeah, those are the people who fall the most, kids and older adults, interestingly enough. But it's not too late.
Yeah, that's really helpful, that research study. So they weren't actually diagnosed with CTE at the beginning of the study?
No, they say that CTE is a diagnosis mostly based on autopsy now, because they're going to get a brain sample and look at that particular pattern. But, you know, I'll send you some pictures. We have some pictures of the before and after scans you could put on with the show or whatever. But it's significantly decreased activity, looking like, you know, if they're not having dementia now, they're headed towards it. And then their brains actually look pretty good at the end of the study. So that's what we assume, I guess, is that they're headed away from whatever bad place they were headed towards.
That's very hopeful. And it sounded like it was obviously a multi-pronged approach, mm-hmm. All natural nutritional medicine. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work for all participants.
Yeah, 80%.
80%. So that's mm-hmm. in medicine, that's huge. I mean,
it's huge. And it wasn't including hormones. I mean, I think that, and structural, those are elements that I think are often missed. And I missed initially when doing this work. 25 to 50% of people with a brain injury have damage to the pituitary gland, this master hormone gland in the center of the brain. And especially if there's been blast injuries. So these veterans who come back with head injuries from IED blasts or just shooting guns and having explosions go off near them will have damage to pituitary. They'll have low testosterone, low growth hormone. Women will have low estrogen, progesterone. It's terrible. And that can be picked up with a blood test. They don't have to have a brain scan, but can cause many of the same symptoms: fatigue, anxiety, depression.
Low libido,
right?
Yeah, the kind of maybe what seems like erectile dysfunction, and then maybe it's not a Viagra issue, like you said, it's the pituitary gland. Yeah, actually, mm-hmm. I've worked with men, veterans, military men who are in that situation, and you know, they look healthy. So,
right,
for somebody maybe who does primary care work, which I don't do. They may get their annual physical and everything checks off,
right?
But they've had this blast injury and nobody checked their pituitary hormones and their other sex hormones, reproductive hormones like testosterone, et cetera. And everything's low.
And right.
It's just no good. And the depression, I think, is one of the biggest things, but typically I think what a lot of men express as depression is it's like a confusion because they're used to being so healthy before this for the most part, mm-hmm. And very physically active, especially if they've been in the military and carrying heavy gear.
Yeah.
They still have the muscle tone for the most part by the time mm-hmm. at least I saw them mm-hmm. For these individuals. And so they looked, you know, fit. They looked like they would have great testosterone levels, and they're 22 to 27 years old with low testosterone from these blast mm-hmm. injuries and no motivation to work out. You know, it's like they're stuck on the couch and no motivation to be social or really do much of anything. So I think that usually what would happen to them in the conventional world, or at least from the VA, would be, hey, let's give you an antidepressant, some Viagra, send you on your way. You know, there's no spec imaging. There's no pituitary hormone check. There's none of that. And fortunately, with that level of depression, I worry about, you know, for the listeners, and I've gotten messages through social media over the months from other podcasts here about similar topics where people have had head injuries for years untreated, you know, and I'm sure you get contacted too. Now, with your book especially, and it's like, this is a long-standing thing, and it looks like ADD, right?
Right. It's like an acquired ADD is what I call it. Acquired ADD. Because ADD is physiologic. You're born with it, essentially. But it can be made worse through brain injury. And a lot of folks with ADD tend to be more impulsive. They'll be the ones who jump, leap before they look, and be interested in exciting, risky sports, you know, whether it's football or roller derby or whatever, and have head injuries. But you can see the difference on imaging. And I remember this nurse who had a car accident. She always did well in school up until then. And she wanted to go to nursing school. That was it. And so she was like 35 and always did well in school. And she started to try and go to school, and she just couldn't focus and concentrate. And she was given a prescription of dexedrine, which is a stimulant. And that helped a little bit, truthfully. But it's kind of like if you don't have the wires connected, you can't just put more voltage through them, you know. So when we put her on a program to increase blood flow to help her brain to heal, then she could do school. and she could focus and concentrate. So it was really a brain injury. It wasn't just a dopamine deficiency and just ADD. It was more than that.
Was she able to decrease that medication yeah. or go off of it or one or the other?
Well, what she did was we took, this is what I tend to do, is go off the stimulants until their brains are healed, reassess. And then if they're needed, these medications can be very useful, especially for school and things like that. It can be the difference between functioning and actually accomplishing your goals and not functioning. So I've kind of changed and been more open to my view of stimulants over the years, but a lot lower dose. So she was having to use like 10 milligrams. She could use 5 instead.
So. Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. So less of the, I mean, some of those stimulants I know have like side effects of appetite suppression mm-hmm. or, you know, or some people constitutionally are more sensitive. So even if they take yeah. it right in the morning before school or right when they're going to school, mm-hmm. it may stay in their system and they have insomnia or something like that.
Totally. Yeah. A lot of people have those problems. So it's nice to be able to avoid them if we can, mm-hmm. Using other, you know, nutrients, supplements, exercise. I mean, ADD is really prevalent and a huge, huge impact for people, whether it's acquired ADD from brain injury or physiological. A lot of problems with the current medications, whether it's, you know, just simply because it's a controlled substance, there's problems getting it and getting the right dose, or insomnia, agitation, irritability is a major concern, or just change in personality. People will really change how they are sometimes, but again, can be very useful too. So it can be a double-edged sword. I just think it's more than that for many people. It's looking at the other elements and then, you know, and that's what we learned in school, right? Medications as needed, surgery as needed, you know, go to the hospital if you need to. It's like that higher force intervention. But let's do some of our groundwork first and then make sure there's no nutrient deficiencies, hormonal deficiencies, you're sleeping, you're eating and exercising. And if you're still not performing well, maybe we should look at a medication. You know? So
yeah,
that's my philosophy.
Makes a lot of sense to me. I think one of my biggest kind of pet peeves is when people throw out conventional medicine completely. And mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's like somebody has an obviously medical emergency and they need to go to the hospital and they don't. And then that's yeah. when it gets to be very dangerous. And they're like, oh, mm-hmm. I want to rub like this herb on it. And it's kind of like, no. Let's go to the ER first and make sure that you're not going to die from whatever sepsis or infections becoming that later yeah. on. So, you know, for the listeners, please do use conventional medicine for what it is there for and don't mm-hmm. neglect yourself. Because yeah. you know, you could have repercussions later. Getting back to head injuries, you mentioned before the show, kind of in some of the notes that you sent me, mm-hmm. that men hit their heads more than women from, you know, accidents and some of the other things we ever talked about. But you also mentioned a statistic that women are at higher risk of having mm-hmm. post-concussive syndrome yeah. and this being a worse thing, potentially long-term, it sounded like. Can you, you know, give yeah. us a little bit more info around that and why?
Sure. So, men's brain versus women's brains. Of course, we're always trying to figure this out. Myself, I'm always trying to figure out women's brains personally in my life because, I have a lot of women in my life who are really important to me. And it's, you know, Dr. Amon did a study of, you know, we have this database, right? So that was one of the first questions he asked as well. It's okay. What's the difference between the woman, female brain and the male brain? Female brain, much more active. So I think that's stereotypical. You know, I got to be careful now. I'm speaking in generalities here, but in general, over, I think it was 40,000 scans, female brain was a little more active than the male brain. Not in all cases, but I tend to see that as well. You know, my wife, for example, as we're going to sleep, she's still thinking of things and trying to like solve parenting issues with the kids and worrying about different things. I'm just ready to like, okay, it was a good day. We made it through the day. Let's just go to sleep, you know? And she's thinking about things, which is great. But I think that's a common trait. It's just always thinking, you know, and men's brains, my brain, I should speak for myself, can go into hibernation mode pretty easily. Just kind of chill, relax, go down. Not all men's brains do that, but some do. And the other difference being that it's just the actual neuron or nerve cell is a little bit different, male versus female. Female is a little bit more graceful and a little bit more thinner and more fragile, the myelin sheath around. And so it can, if there is physical impact, it can be damaged more easily. And men's brains are just a little bit sturdier. Not that we're designed to hit anyone's head at all. I mean, rams have this sort of cushion of spongy bone. Woodpeckers have sort of a shock absorber. But human brains are not designed to hit soccer balls, to play football, really. We're not just not designed for that. Even with helmets, helmets don't necessarily prevent brain injuries. They just decrease the impact. When I think about girls playing soccer, hitting soccer balls with their heads, makes me cringe a little bit. You know, at least they've increased the age to, I think, 11 or 12 when they can start to hit soccer balls with their heads. But I think it should be probably longer. They should do like a chest trap or something like that. Just, I think the rules of the sport should change a little bit to protect at least developing athletes' brains. So they're not hitting soccer balls, football, same thing. Don't want to take away sports. I love sports. I played soccer for many years myself. But now that we know the vulnerabilities that are there, like the brain is soft. It's as soft as butter. And it's housed inside a hard skull. It's like rock. And it has many sharp bony ridges. So an impact, it can be bruised very easily. In fact, if you took a brain out, put it on the table, it would be goo in a few hours. It's that soft. So it's easy to damage. And, you know, 10% of athletes have a concussion every season, 10%. So it's just so common.
And as far as soccer, do we know when we found out scientifically that the brain is imaged from heading the ball? Was it recently in the last 5+ years, or
that the brain's damaged from headers?
Yeah.
I believe so. I'm not sure exactly when, but it's been, the changes have been recent. Yeah. When did that?
Cause we didn't grow
at
up
least five I years mean, ago
growing up playing soccer. I grew up playing soccer in high school, middle school, year round almost. And we never heard about that. And then all of a sudden it seemed like somebody was like, oh yeah, by the way, did you know? And now it's like, oh yeah, if you had the ball enough, you could have multiple concussions or, you know, minor. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to say minor concussions anymore, but you can, you know, damage your brain. And
right. Repeated subconcussive blows to the head also count. So that's what we know from chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Exactly, Sam. It's like, it's not just those big concussions, but the repeated subconcussive blows to the head are cumulative. They're going to build up, and that's what will cause that chronic inflammatory state. You'll get these tangles, looking in some ways similar to dementia, and that's why it becomes a form of dementia later on, but like 30 years later, but it gets started that young. However, I really think that we can help these folks who have had hits to the head. And I wrote this book for two groups of people: those who have had concussions and haven't gotten better, and then those people who may have had some sort of health problem, brain health problem, mental health problem, and they're not sure, it may be due to a past concussion. And I would like them to think back and say, okay, I didn't have to lose consciousness. A head injury counts as, did I fall off of a horse? You know, it's pretty far. Have I fallen out of a tree? Have I ever had a car accident and just gotten enough jostling to see stars for a second? I mean, that's enough to cause some level of damage. And it doesn't have to line up exactly with the start of symptoms. So like there was this pastor who had a motor vehicle accident, went to the ER, had a CT scan, was fine. And then about 2 weeks later, he couldn't write a sermon. He just couldn't think, couldn't concentrate, memory wasn't working well. And that went on for months for him. So that, and that was a mild traumatic brain injury again, which affected him for months and not able to really do his job. So other patients, I got to tell you about this guy, we'll call him Jeremy. And when he came to see me, he was 21. He is a jazz drummer and he was really talented, but his band wasn't going anywhere. He had been suicidally depressed since he was 14 years old. Every day, just didn't want to live, depressed, didn't know why. And smoking pot, it's the only thing that helped him. When he then came in, and he had tried every medication or every class of medication. He had tried, been referred from a really good therapist. He had tried several. We scanned his brain, and it was clear he had had damage to the left side, left temporal lobe, left frontal lobe. And he, on his history, his evaluation, he had not listed any history of having a head injury. So when he came in, I asked him, Jeremy, have you ever had a head injury, brain injury? No, I don't think so. Have you ever fallen out of a tree? Have you ever fallen off of a log? Dove into a shallow pool? Had a car accident? No, no, no. And I said, have you ever played contact sports? Oh, I started playing football when I was like 12, 13 years old. He was a scrawny little kid mashed up against the coach's son, who was 6 feet tall at the time. And he would just get pounded and would see stars and headaches and the whole bit. And that's when his depression and then eventually suicidal thoughts began. So in addition to a little tweak of his medication, we put him on a program to help him heal his brain, similar to what the football players were on we talked about earlier. And over the next several months, his depression began to lift, his suicidal thoughts went away. He stopped smoking pot, he quit the band, he went to music school. He's about to graduate in a couple months from Berklee School of Music, doing great. So, you know, that's something to think about is, okay, you don't need a blood test, you don't need a scan to think back in your life. If I had hits to my head, you know, and have I had several, maybe that's contributing to my memory problems, my mood problems, my sleep problems, fatigue. You know, brain injuries can cause a whole host of different symptoms depending on which part of the brain is injured, depending on your susceptibility. You know, everyone has a different level of risk when it comes to brain injury. Imagine a tank or an IED blast goes off. You have two soldiers. One gets brain injury, the other doesn't. Why? You know, I think it's brain reserve, the health of their brain at the time of injury, essentially.
Yeah. Can you explain a little bit more about what brain reserve is to the listeners?
Sure. So brain reserve is this idea that you're born with a certain amount of healthy cells in your brain, and you can either make them, you know, unfortunately, we're all headed towards degeneration slowly and gradually, but we can really slow that process down until I think most of us can live to a ripe old age with good cognitive ability. It doesn't have to be that you have a lot of, quote, senior moments or difficulties, but that you can improve or speed up the progression. And you speed it up by drinking more alcohol, watching more television, eating more Cheetos, eating more like sugar, and not learning new things. You know, that would decrease and speed up your decline. You slow it down and improve it, and also head injuries would make it worse, of course. You improve it by the opposite, eating healthy food, positive social relationships, continuing to always learn and grow, and managing your hormones. I think that's a real key. I used to be more conservative when it came to hormones, whereas like, okay, we're getting older, they should go down, but we used to only live to age 50. You know, now we live to like 80 or 90. We need something to help keep our cells regenerating. So yeah, brain reserve is the balance of the good and the bad, either making your brain worse or better.
Lovely. Yeah, I like that.
And thanks for the reminder about the TV, because I think now it's not so much like cable TV, maybe when we were growing up and in high school or even early college, but now it's like Netflix and chill or another live streaming or streaming service. Like there's now Disney streaming and et cetera.
It's true. So
whatever, Hulu or whatever you subscribe to, but
yeah,
you know, you can easily sit for 3 to 5 hours just watching your favorite TV show and not even think, wow, this could be affecting my brain health if I do this every day or every other day, 5 to 7 days a week for months. And, you know, I think there's, you know, there used to be like punk rock songs about like kill your television, but now it's like Netflix has taken over these other streaming things. So
yeah,
great reminder. Is the whole old adage about like doing crossword puzzles and things like Sudoku as far fall into, does that still count falling into learning new things?
Good question. Yes, definitely. I would think about it like physical exercise, almost like in cross training. You know, if you've always done crosswords, you're an expert at crossword puzzles, well, you need to do more Sudoku or some other thing, learn a new language, learn an instrument. And think about what areas are really hard for you. Like if languages are hard for you, well, you probably need to focus on doing those more because that's a weak spot. Sort of like you go to the gym, yeah, you've got some big biceps. We're not need to be doing more bicep curls. You need to work out your legs, you know, keep it balanced.
I like that analogy. And then what do you think about the Luminosity app or other smart apps? Are those worthwhile?
Those are great. I think they're all good. So we actually have one, My Brain Fit Life, and you can even do a free brain health assessment. It's actually called brainhealthassessment.com, and you can assess the health of your brain, see where your deficiencies lie. And I believe that is free to do that assessment. And it's the same cognitive testing that we do in our clinic. It's very similar to. So it's like a web-based cognitive test, attention, memory, mood and emotion, and sort of identifying emotions in others as well. So it gives us you can get yourself a wide range of your level of cognitive ability and which areas you may need to train up. So you could do that assessment and then go and do, okay, I need to do more on focusing, or I need to work on my memory. You can go get out the old memory card game and play memory, or try and memorize your list of groceries at the store. You know, there's lots of ways you can do this without using the computer, but I do like the computerized brain games. Brain HQ is good. There's one called Duel and Back. It's an app. And the airline pilot I was telling you about earlier found it really helpful for him to use that because it trains executive functioning, which is like the planning aspect of your brain and having to sort of make your way through this maze and then back. And he found that really helpful as part of his journey. It's usually not one thing that helps people to heal. It's usually a few really key elements that is really unlocks their ability to heal.
Excellent. Yeah, those are really helpful recommendations. I personally am going to look into all those that you mentioned. So thanks for suggesting those.
Of course.
And I'll do the brain assessment and see where I'm at.
Let's see where you're at, Sam.
Yeah, let's get a checkup for me. I mean, especially I think for people like us when, you know, in pilots and lawyers and engineers, software engineers, and, you know, greater Seattle areas, a lot of software engineers. So if somebody listening to this fits in any of those other categories or any profession, you know, you're an educator, you're a teacher, et cetera, or you're, you know, a stay-at-home parent and you need to raise your kids, you know, if you have a head injury, that can be really, really trying with your kids, you know, being loud and you having headaches all day and the noise making your headaches worse. So
for sure,
all the above and more. For a person with like chronic head injuries, and let's say they come to you years out, Would you recommend they come and see you, get a spec scan and work with someone like you? Or would you recommend they try to like do these things piecemeal? Like what is your typical recommendation after they have post-concussive syndrome?
Well, this is why I wrote the book. It's because not everyone can come see us. That would be the ideal, is because it will be much more efficient if you can work with me and understand the brain, exactly which areas are damaged. We tailor the program for you. We can do the labs. I have so much experience in this. It just makes it much more efficient. But again, so to come see us, typically a full evaluation, it's $4,000. So that's two scans, 2 hours with the doctor, and then follow up, check in. And so, and typically that's, you know, but it's, so it's a, for scans and evaluation, it's actually fairly reasonable, but it's still a chunk of change. So part of it's just a financial decision. And like, this is why I wrote the book, is because there's so many people, there's millions of Americans who are living with traumatic brain injury and they're not getting better and they need help. And so, and then at the other side, there's all this literature out there pointing to what to do. And I'm like, we need to share this. So that's why I put it together into this book for people to have as like a handbook. And essentially what we do at Amen Clinics to try and help people to heal. And so if you need a place to start, you can always start there. And if you're not getting better, then we can always scan you later and help you get to the next level. But or even a good naturopathic doctor, you could perhaps take the book, say, hey doc, let's put our heads together and do what's in this book, because oftentimes labs are a key piece and naturopathic doctors are great with labs and looking at optimal ranges, can look at diet and help with perhaps trying keto. One of the aspects is looking at structural support. So if you haven't looked at doing upper cervical chiropractic work, or maybe you do have a chiropractor who's done that, or do you know Dr. Hillary Lampers?
Yeah, actually, I was just on her podcast. I think it was last month. Yeah.
You were?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
But she does the neurocranial, what is it called?
Like it's the cranial thing where neurocorrection technique or something. I forget the exact name. Sorry, Hillary. But I know what you're talking about. It's like the nasal corrective technique.
Neurocranial restructuring.
Yes. Yeah. Neurocranial restructuring.
It's the craziest thing. You have little balloons go up the nose, inflate them, crack, adjust the sphenoid. In school, she had trained in this and we were students. And I, of course, volunteered to like, they were slow one day on the shift Dr. Kevin Connors was like, don't you know how to do this? Can you show us? And do we have any volunteers? And I was like, oh yeah, I want to see what that's like. Cause I've been hit in the face a number of times playing soccer. I'm like, okay, I maybe need to adjust my sphenoid bone. Doesn't hurt at all. You'd think it would, but it's just basically adjust this bone sort of behind your sinuses, under your eyes, and can be very helpful. So in any case, the structural, helping the cerebral spinal fluid flow, blood flow, there's upper cervical chiropractors that can help with this. Just making sure that's in alignment is really key, because you can't supplement that away. Hormones are not going to help that, just as a structural piece. So,
awesome. Yeah, I get active, a lot of chiropractic work. And I also found functional neurologist certified was helpful for me.
Very helpful. Yeah, those folks are highly trained. Excellent if you can find them.
Yeah. So those were things that helped me, but like you said, it's an individualized approach you know, I usually recommend people who have had a concussion, whether it's recent or been chronic post-concussive syndrome, you know, work with a team. Mm-hmm. And one of the really exciting things about somebody working with you is the level of research, the database of testing, the spec scan combined with naturopathic medicine and Dr. Amen's work and protocols is, to me, is very exciting. And, you know, if someone can afford it, why not? I mean, your brain, you can't, once things are too far gone later on, there's a point of no return, right? So,
yeah.
that's when you don't want to say, oh yeah, by the way, now we can do it. And
exactly.
So that, to me, that is motivating enough, I think, for most people. And I think especially if they have, I mean, we don't have time to get into dementia, which would be a whole other podcast, mm-hmm. but if they have genetics for that, high risk mm-hmm. for that, then with concussion history, then by all means, go see Dr. Cabran.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam. Yeah. I'd love to help people with this. This is my passion. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being on. I know our time is limited and you have, you have to get going here in a minute. For everybody, again, Dr. Cabran's book is Concussion Rescue, a comprehensive program to heal traumatic brain injury. And you're on social media, Cabran, mm-hmm. is it pronounced Kapchick?
Chapik.
Chapik, excuse me. Dr. Cabran Chapik, ND on LinkedIn as well. And Dr. Cabran _ Chapik on Instagram. So everybody go follow him on Instagram. Get his book. And is your book on like all the platforms like Amazon, et cetera?
Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There's an audio version, Audible. And we're working on a video. We shot this, gosh, it was a few months ago. But yeah, we're going to have a video series for people who like to watch. So awesome. We'll do that too. Yeah.
I'm gonna get your book on Audible and I'm going to check it out and I'll share it with my patients. And obviously everybody listening should definitely check it out. This is something that, as Dr. Cabran said, a lot of people suffer with, and I'm very excited that you were able to be on the podcast today. Thanks so much.
It was great talking with you, Sam. Really appreciate it.
All right, everybody, share the podcast with your friends and family. And until next time, we'll talk to you soon.
Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.